something about myself.
Yeah.
I want to work with handicapped children, and my parents are my best friends. Oh, and I start convent school next semester, and I fuck on the first day. April Fools.
Whoa, Nikki, baby, you're outrageous. Hey, now get out of here, you knucklehead.
Hello and welcome to 80s Movie Montage. This is Derek.
And this is Anna.
And that was a scene from the wholesome, family-friendly April Fool's Day.
April Fool's Day, which this episode is coming out the day after April Fool's Day, but hopefully you guys had some fun pranks.
Yeah, hopefully they were more fun than in this movie.
Yeah, we'll get to it for sure. I'm a little bit not inclined to think that that was an appropriate April Fool's Day joke, but
none of them were.
None of them were.
No, no.
And this for me, so this is a film that I have had the key art like seared in my brain for years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've always remembered the key art because it's very iconic with like the woman who's holding a knife behind her back and then her hair is in a noose.
Oh, yeah.
Like her is braided into a noose. So, you know, back in the Blockbuster days where you'd walk through the aisles. I miss the Blockbuster days. You don't?
I loved
going to Blockbuster.
I did enjoy as much as the next person going to Blockbuster with a movie in mind, finding out that it was not there, pathetically hanging out near like the person who was putting the tapes back on the shelves to ask them, oh, do you have this movie?
I used to also be that person
who
actually was, because I also worked at Blockbuster back in the day. Good times.
Good times.
Anyway, I remember the key art, but I've never actually watched the movie.
Okay.
So this, for me, was a first screening. What about you?
I hadn't seen it before. So,
I
did not really know what to expect. And I think I was expecting something more in line with, like, My Bloody Valentine or Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And there's like, a pretty significant twist in this.
Oh, yes, there is.
And that twist really turns it from like a stupid slasher movie to an almost equally stupid mystery, murder mystery movie.
It does. So let's jump into the main players and then we'll certainly discuss the surprise ending.
Oh, yeah.
So
which one?
Yeah, I know. It is. You made a good comment where you were like, this is like the ending of Lord of the Rings, where there's like
Return of the King.
Oh, Return of the King.
Yeah, yeah.
What did I say?
It's fine.
Okay. Where there's like a half dozen different endings.
You think this is over? You're like, start getting up out of your seat. No, they haven't.
And the thing is that it's only an hour and a half movie. It's like not that long, but okay. So written by credits. A familiar name, but somebody that we haven't brought up in quite a while, Danilo Bach.
Hmm.
What do you think about the way I'm pronouncing his name?
I call him Danny B.
Danny
for
short.
That way there's no
good
mistake.
Way to get around that.
Yeah.
So
written by Danny B.
Yeah. And it's interesting because he doesn't have like a crazy long filmography as far as writing credits go, but the very notable franchise, which he helped to originate, we talked about, was that season one, probably? That was way back with Entei. Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally forgot.
Season two.
So everyone go back to that season and find out how we said.
I mean, just find Beverly Hills Cop.
How did we say his name then?
Yeah. Good point. So he actually, for that film, got a Best Original Screenplay Oscar nomination.
Okay. That's actually pretty impressive for what's essentially like a cop comedy.
Yeah. I thought that that was really impressive and probably something that wouldn't happen anymore. But and because he originated the material, he's kind of been grandfathered into all the sequels because of the characters that he created. So
are they making a new one?
They sure are. They're in post about it. I was actually only going to bring it up because it has been filmed. It's in the can. It's going to come out. But he has credits for Beverly Hills Cop 2 and 3. And then the one that's coming out, I think this summer, is Beverly Hills Cop Axel F.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
So moving on to directed by Fred Walton. So he has, I don't want to say just because any project is a big deal, but he has 16 directing credits. 9 of them are TV movies.
Okay.
And he has a very, very notable credit that also, like, I would say horror, that kind of makes sense for maybe why he was tapped to direct this one. So he directed When a Stranger Calls.
Is that when they're calling from inside
yes.
the house?
Yes.
The calls come coming from inside
yeah,
the home.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, and that's also why, like, I mean, I break my rule all the time as far as, like, not usually listing TV movies, but I only have
Is that
two...
a rule?
It's a strong guideline.
Okay.
So, but anyway, I just have When a Stranger Calls and also The Rosary Murders for him outside of, like, his TV movie directing credits.
Yeah.
So. Okay, I am moving on to cinematography, and I absolutely love, this is a weird thing to say about cinematographer, but I love this guy's filmography.
Oh, okay.
So we haven't talked about him before, Charles Minsky. This holds for like a lot of people who are associated with this film. They're like in different ways, like very early in their careers. This is just his second IMDb credit.
I mean, that's not uncommon for this kind of movie.
For horror. Mm-hmm.
If this kind of movie, if you're considering it as just like a 80s slasher movie.
Yeah.
Which again, I will say it really isn't, but it's not surprising that like people are earlier in their careers.
Yeah,
it's,
a lot of people cut their teeth, so to speak, on horror.
I mean, that makes it, when it came out, like maybe if I had done any like research ahead of time, I guess I would have known there was a twist, but I like to go into these like movies that I haven't seen pretty blind
mm-hmm.
so that I can just experience it, because so many people were obviously like fairly earlier in their careers, and it had like the acting was very much on a level of like an early Friday the 13th.
But it's so funny because there's so many familiar faces
oh, yeah.
in this movie.
It made me really believe that it was just like a dumb slasher movie instead of a dumb murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, not even a real murder mystery, just mystery.
Fair enough. No one actually dies. Oh, spoiler.
Spoiler.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, people. If you haven't seen this movie before, going to be spoilers. But we're like over 30 years away from the release of this film. So
it's kind of on you at this point.
Yeah.
Let's be serious.
So moving back to Charles Minsky. So he was the DP. He has several very notable credits to his name. So he also was the DP on Pretty Woman.
Mm, okay.
He did Dutch, which I've said before is a fun film.
Al Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
Ed O'Neill.
Yep, exactly. The Gun and Betty Lou's Handbag.
Oh, yeah. I remember that movie.
Yeah, isn't Molly Ringwald, I believe. Kazam with Shaq.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Dear God. The Princess Diaries 2 Royal Engagement.
Mm.
You, Me, and Dupree. Okay, so here's why I love this filmography. He was the DP on the film we're covering today, April Fool's Day.
That makes sense.
He's also the DP on the film Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay.
He's also the DP on the film New Year's Eve.
All right.
And he's also the DP on the film Mother's Day.
Wait, is Mother's Day a horror movie?
I don't think any of the rest are. Maybe Mother's Day is. I could see Mother's Day being a horror. The other two are not.
Oh, okay.
But I just think that is so wonderful that this guy was tapped to shoot all of these films that are based on, like, holidays.
If you got an idea for a movie that's going to end in the word day.
Yeah. Or this, Eve.
This is
I just
guy.
Think that was, as I was going through his credits, I was like, wait a minute. And I mean, he has to be aware. He has to be aware of, like,
oh,
just
yeah.
the humor in that.
Yeah.
That,
I
you know,
so.
He's the DP on all of them. But, and he's also done some TV work. He shot the TV series Back in the Game. And then I put this one in because we, not too long ago, were talking about it. He actually was the DP. And I guess it was a TV movie, Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh, the 2016?
2016.
Okay.
Yeah. So he shot it. In any case.
Good one, Chuck Minsky.
Yeah, so moving on to another Charles Bernstein. So he was the composer on this film, and he has a fun filmography as well for other reasons. He just has he's worked on some stuff where, you know, I love a good title, like a good crazy title.
We all do.
For different things. Yeah. So he composed on the film The Man from Orgy.
Wait, what?
And Orgy is an acronym. So it's O period, R period, G period, Y period.
Play on The Man from Uncle?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know the nature of the film. I have no idea what it's about. But okay. I love this title too. So he was not the composer on Rosemary's Baby, but he was the composer on Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Which is that a sequel?
It's a TV movie.
Oh.
I have no idea if it's like a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like a parody or
like
something,
a true sequel, like if it had been, you know, given the okay by the originators of the film. But like in any case, I just thought it was really funny. He was the composer on a film called Viva Knievel.
Oh, like evil. Okay.
Knievel.
I like it.
So he did that. This is another fun one. And I feel like this is, I don't know, but, you know, I mentioned a couple minutes ago that the director of this film was also the director on When a Stranger Calls. So Bernstein did not work on When a Stranger Calls, but he was the composer on a TV movie called Are You in the House Alone? Which feels like it's kind of like a ripoff.
Yeah,
kind of sounds like it's probably like, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not in the house alone. There's someone making calls from inside the house.
Are you in the house alone? And why would you tell someone that?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Come on, people.
Come on.
Get a grip.
He worked on the 1983 film Independence Day.
Is that also the one with the aliens and Jeff Goldblum?
I don't think so.
Jeff Goldblum prevents an alien invasion with an apple.
I mean, that would have been Jeff Goldblum even pre... That would have been like Jeff Goldblum a la
Buckaroo.
Yeah.
He could have done it.
Here we go, though. So he was the composer on Cujo.
Oh, yeah.
He also was the composer on A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
This one falls right in line. So I think he has, like, an affinity or, you know, people tap him a lot for horror. He did the film When Danger Follows You Home.
That definitely sounds like it could be a Lifetime movie, though.
Yes,
yeah,
very much so.
Yeah.
And then this one I had to put in because this is maybe one of the more amazing titles I've ever heard of in my life. Sharktopus versus Werewolf.
What?
Sharktopus versus Werewolf.
Werewolf?
Whale.
Werewolf.
So.
Why are you saying it that way?
Well, couldn't you catch that? Obviously, sharktopus isn't just a real word.
I was wondering, like, why are you saying werewolf like that? And how the fuck is a werewolf getting in the water to fight this sharktopus?
Well, I mean, even the second half. Okay, so whale, sure. But wolf?
Yeah.
At least sharktopus combines two different animals that both reside in the ocean.
Look, I talk about this, like, the last few episodes. I'm like, I'm going to watch this movie that... Look, I'm fucking watching Sharktopus versus Werewolf.
Yeah, right?
This is going
to
happen.
I need to know how that all plays out.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's so fun. And that is Charles Bernstein.
Werewolf.
Okay. That would have been funny if I was just saying werewolf. Super weird. Something went wrong today. Okay. So moving on to film editing, Bruce Green. We haven't talked about him yet, so he's a new name on the podcast, but he also, you know, we were just saying sometimes horror is kind of a springboard for people to do other things, and sometimes it's just the thing that people like to do. So this guy has a little bit of both. Early in his career, he was also the editor on Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, as well as Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives.
I can't remember that one. I know he lives. That's all I remember.
Is that the one where... Okay, so either that's the one where it's the kid's dad that pretends he's Jason, like the paramedic whose kid dies.
Yeah.
And then he... So the whole movie is like not Jason at all.
Could be.
Or it's the one where he is revived by lightning. I don't remember off the top of my head.
My guess is The Lightning, because I think the other one was like four, maybe. Four or five.
Oh, you might be right, and this is six. Okay. We'll have to return to those. We have to do one in the first place.
It's true.
Like, maybe the season five is the season where we finally do a Friday the 13th movie.
It's all up to you.
We would start with the first one. It's all up to me.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. We just have a whole month of them.
I didn't realize that there was a Family Ties Vacation TV movie, but he cut that.
Okay.
So he did that. I've brought this film up before. It's strange to me that it received, like, critical attention. It's a film called Square Dance. Have you ever heard of it?
Never heard of it.
I think I brought it up once on the podcast ages ago, but I don't know why I saw this at a young age. It has Winona Ryder and Rob Lowe.
Okay.
I think Jason Robards is in it as well. There's like a couple big names in it. It's extremely early in Winona Ryder's career. So she's very, very young. It might have been like right after like Lucas or something.
Oh, wow. Okay, that early.
Yeah. And it's extremely strange. Rob Lowe plays somebody who seems to have cognitive challenges. So first of all, there's that.
Mm.
I get it. It was the 80s. So they would have cast somebody who didn't actually have those kinds of issues for that role. But it's just,
yeah, I mean, they did that when it wasn't the 80s. I remember Gilbert Grape.
Yeah, and I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio, I think he got like an Oscar nomination for that.
Yeah.
But in any case, so he plays this character, and then there's like kind of just like a weird relationship between him and Winona. Like, I just remember thinking, this doesn't seem right when I was a kid, but it, like, I guess, like,
was there a
premiered
single,
at Sundance, and
was there a single square dance in this movie?
I don't remember.
God damn
it. I don't remember that. But in any case, so Bruce Green cut it. So he was the editor on that.
Okay.
He did, I have almost all films for him, and he's done a lot. He did Punchline, Three Fugitives, Young Guns 2, another Winona Ryder film, Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael. He does The Doctor, Cool Runnings. I mean, prolific.
Oh, Cool Runnings is so good.
Yeah, he does Cool Runnings. You were just watching that the other day, right?
I was, yeah.
Angels in the Outfield, a personal favorite film of mine, While You Were Sleeping.
Oh, it is. It very much is.
I watch it on, like, a loop over the holidays.
It's true.
Two If by C, another Sandra Bullock film. Phenomenon. Here's another one that has, like, kind of a questionable story and casting, The Other Sister.
Oh.
Did you ever see that one?
No.
So very similar to Square Dance, and that Juliette Lewis plays somebody who, as does Giovanni Ribisi.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They're a couple.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I've seen parts of that. Yeah.
So that's another one. In any case, Runaway Bride, Big Mama's House. He was the editor on both Princess Diaries and the sequel, Royal Engagement. Freaky Friday, Yours, Mine, and Ours. That one's come up like already in this podcast. Baby Mama. He also was the editor on Valentine's Day.
Okay.
So fun. Mr. Popper's Penguins. And then more recently, the TV show Jane the Virgin.
Oh, cool.
So pretty big filmography and lots of huge movies. And we are already at the stars of the film.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, first of all, actually, I should say, it's wild to me that we now are doing two Deborah Foreman films that are not Valley Girl and that we still haven't done Valley Girl. We've already done Real Genius.
Yeah.
That was super early. That, I think, was season one. And
that's what I remember her from, because when I'm like, she looks very familiar, and you said Valley Girl, I'm like, but I haven't really seen that, so...
I mean, we won't do it soon since we're just covering a film where she is the lead, but Valley Girl is so good. I've said it a lot. I'll say it again. I want to do that one. So at some point.
We will.
So Deborah Foreman in this film plays Muffy/Buffy. I mean, of all the names for twins.
Yeah, but she really doesn't, because... spoilers, there's no Buffy.
There's no twin. It's like twist after twist after twist that's kind of like...
How smart did I feel when I'm like, like, there's a twin. There's totally a twin in this horror movie.
And I even was like, did you read the synopsis or something for this?
And then when I, that like sense of satisfaction only to be tossed out the window when I realized I was faked out just like everyone else.
I mean, the work that this chick went through, I mean, and she does explain why, but it's all very convoluted. Okay, so very Deborah much. Foreman, I don't think she's actually been doing a ton of work lately, but she does have some notable credits to her name. At the top of the list, I would say, hands down, is Valley Girl. She's amazing in that. And that also has Nicolas Cage in it. Mm-hmm. I think, no, he already was going by Nicolas Cage at that point, I think. I think Fast Times was the last time he went by Nicolas Coppola, but...
Okay.
Yeah. Grizzly 2 Revenge. I do want to do that one, too. It has, like, actually, strangely, a lot of big names in it.
I wonder when Jaws 2 came out, because it was also The Revenge. Wasn't it?
I thought...
Or was that 3? No.
That was 3.
Jaws 2 is just Jaws 2, huh?
I think Jaws 2 is just Jaws 2.
Okay, well... Yeah. Grizzly 2, The Revenge.
She, as mentioned, is in Real Genius. She is in the film, I have almost all films for her. My Chauffeur, gotta love this title, Lobster Man from Mars.
Nice.
Sounds like an excellent film. So there was a remake of Valley Girl in 2020. She has a little cameo as like a shop girl.
Oh, that's so nice. That was a nice little Easter egg.
Yeah, like they did the same thing with... oh my goodness, Sarandon in the remake of Fright Night.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I like when they do that. And then she has done some TV appearances, but those are like the big names for the other projects that she's been a part of. So
she was in an episode of Family Ties just because we brought them up.
Yeah.
And also she was in one episode of MacGyver.
There you go.
I always bring up MacGyver.
You sure do.
MacGyver is like that version of Supernatural where like just everyone was in there at some point.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to Griffin O'Neill. So here we go. It in total is 9 college kids. So I'll try to, like, Muffy is the host.
Yes.
So she's
her estate on the island that they're going to see.
Yeah, so that's who Muffy is. She's the one that's hosting everyone. She does tell everybody that she's about to turn 21 and that the house should then go, like, that's part of her inheritance.
Yeah.
So that's who that is. Then Griffin O'Neill, who plays Skip, there's also a twist to that, but he tells everybody else, like, he's kind of the person who brings everybody to Muffy's house, and he says that he's her cousin.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But that they don't really know each other that way.
He's her brother in real life.
In the movie.
In the real world in the movie.
Yes, in the movie, he is in fact her brother, but he tells them that he is her cousin.
But it's all very weird because it's like, don't they all go to school together? Like, or do they go to school with Skip? Like, that's the one thing. Well, okay, there's a lot of things about the movie, but one of the things that I was a little fuzzy about is like, to what degree do they all know each other? Like, it's clear that we'll get to her, but Nan, the more reserved girl.
Yeah.
And then, I'll have to go find his name. But the guy who, you know, clearly wants to get together with Muffy for her money, they seem to not really know the other kids that well, if at all.
That was Harvey.
Harvey, thank
you. Of course,
you.
He goes by Hal.
Who is, like, making everybody go, call him Hal.
Yeah.
Call me Hal.
Yeah.
But the rest of them seem to know each other really well. So, but then they all, anyway, it was all kind of a confusing thing of like
indeed it was
just to not run that in the ground, but okay. So Griffin O'Neill, if you're curious, he is the son of Ryan O'Neill and the brother of Tatum O'Neill. He did try to kind of go, I guess, into the family business. It's hard when your sister wins an Oscar at like 10 years old. Real hard to compete with that.
That's tough to compete with. Yeah.
Yeah. So he has a total of 12 acting credits. His last credit is from 92. So he hasn't acted in over 30 years. There is a lot to be said kind of behind the scenes in terms of his private life, the challenges that he went through with like drug use and possible connections of the drug use with his father. there also was a very tragic accident that he was involved in with Francis Ford Coppola's son. There's been a lot going on in his life, which probably affected the success of his acting career. So, all to say, the credits that I have for him, one is straight to video, but the rest, so he was in The Escape Artist, The Wrath? Wraith?
Oh, The Wraith. Yeah, we're gonna cover that one, I think.
Yeah, I think I've talked about wanting to do that one.
Isn't Charlie Sheen in that one?
Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Assault of the Killer Bimbos.
Tell me that's the straight to video.
The direct to video, Ghoulies Go to College.
Okay, I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last credit I have for him is Soulmates. Hmm. So, okay, moving on to Clayton Rohner. So he plays Chaz. And this is another actor who I was like, ugh, I wish we, I mean, you're right. At this point, we have total control over what films we pick. It's just that there's so many good ones. Well, I don't know if I'd say it's a good one, but Just One of the Guys.
Oh, is a movie.
It is a movie. Yeah. So I just want to really do that one at some point. Mm-hmm. And he is like arguably the romantic lead in that film.
He's had a fairly successful, like, actually very successful career.
No, he's, like, still working and everything.
You would recognize him. If you saw this, you would realize I've seen him a bunch of other stuff.
But he does, like, I mean, you know, look, we're 30 years past this film more so. So he looks a little different. But he looks very distinguished in his older age. He has, like, beard and everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, the other film that you and I know him from, because we love this movie, is The Relic.
Mm-hmm.
So with, he's in...
Penelope Ann Miller.
Penelope Ann Miller.
Why the fuck did I say that? I said it like Whale Wolf.
Yes.
Penelope Ann Miller.
Correct. Uh-huh. Yes.
Nailed it.
So he's in that. And then I have some TV work for him. He was on the show Murder One, as well as Good versus Evil. He was in the film Jobs, as in Steve, like Steve, the Steve Jobs movie. Where, so, I think it was, Ashton Kutcher who played him?
Yeah. Well,
there's a couple.
Because Michael Fassbender played him in one of them.
Yeah. Maybe it's the Michael Fassbender one?
Jobs.
In any case, he's in a movie about Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
This makes me kind of question some of his life decisions.
Oh?
He's in the film The Human Centipede 3 Final Sequence.
Fucking hell.
I'm a little like, oh, man, really? Okay.
Well. Damn.
Yeah, I'm being a little judgy.
So happy to have never seen any of those.
Yeah, me too. This is another fun one. Okay, I was a teenage were-skunk.
There are so many were-animals.
I love these mashups.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then to your point, he, besides everything I already listed, he's done like a ton of TV work. So yeah, he's been a very busy actor.
Including one episode of Ozark.
Okay.
Which I haven't seen, but I've heard good things.
Yes.
Yeah.
As have I. Okay, so moving on to Harvey / Harv / Hale. I don't really understand why people think, like, why he would think people would call him Hale when his name is Harvey. There's no L in Harvey.
No.
Doesn't even make sense for Hale to be a nickname for Harvey.
Yeah.
Right?
I never understood it. I think it was
never.
It was just intended to keep me distracted from everything else going on in the movie.
I guess so. Yeah. So Jay Baker, he is one of the individuals in the film who, I don't know if just, you know, other things came up where he had other career aspirations. He doesn't have a incredibly long filmography, 22 total acting credits. The last of those came in 1998. So he hasn't acted in 25 years. But a couple of his... Oh, and just to give you a little bit more context for who Harvey is. So he, like, kind of has, like, wouldn't you say, like, a southern accent?
Yeah, he's the guy who is kind of, like, role-playing or imagining him hooking up with Muffy for her family's money.
Correct.
Yeah.
He's a little stiff. I think he's definitely not as, like, bro-y is the other guys in the film.
Well, no one's as bro-y as Biff.
Yeah. Biff's in this movie.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really know the rest of them that well, doesn't really jive with them. He's just kind of his own thing. He does his own thing in the house. everybody's super nosy in this house. He just goes into random rooms without permission. He takes a cigar.
And then he takes all the cigars.
Yeah, then he steals the rest of them, although it is funny because it's a prank cigar.
Yeah, they're exploding cigars.
So explodes on him.
But that was not how he died.
That's not how he died.
He did not fake die from an exploding cigar.
Correct.
Just to be clear.
Yeah, so that's who Harvey is in this film. And a couple of his other credits, Toy Soldiers, Shag, and Naked Lies.
Okay.
Okay, so moving on to another Deborah Goodrich? Yeah, Goodrich. Yeah. So she plays Nikki. Nikki is who we heard in the clip.
That's who has a certain way about her first dates.
Yeah, and she's kind of the, like, cool chick who...
She thinks she's super cool.
She sunbathes on the ferry.
Yeah, no one does. Come on.
No, nobody does that. But she sunbathes on the ferry, and she kind of has a thing going with Chaz. Although I don't think either one of them are serious about it. And, yeah, and also what's kind of funny about her having a thing with Chaz is that she's also in Just One of the Guys. She has 23 total acting credits. So, again, somebody who I think just for whatever reason didn't stay in the acting world. Her last credit was in 92. So, again, she hasn't acted in over 30 years. But among some of her projects, she was on All My Children, the soap opera, for a while.
Okay.
As mentioned, Just One of the Guys. She also was on St. Elsewhere for a while. Mm-hmm. The film Out on a Limb. And then just kind of like sporadically throughout the course of her career, she made like a couple of TV appearances.
Okay.
So, okay.
And then she was on one episode of 21 Jump Street.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So moving on to Rob. Now, okay. Let me preface it this way. The next two people that I'm bringing up are a couple in the movie.
Okay.
So the guy in the couple is Rob. He has like kind of like a long dark mullet, kind of almost.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
And do you know who I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh. Rob basically looks like he kind of reminded me of the guy from Some Kind of Wonderful.
Yes, he reminds you of Craig Schiffer.
He's not him.
No. But no, it's not him.
But for purposes of trying to like keep straight these crazy kids. Just
there's a lot of kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Played by Ken Oland is the way I'm going to say his last name. And it's not even the first time we've brought him up.
Mm-mm.
So the first time we talked about this actor was back, I think it was season 2 when we talked about summer school.
Yeah.
This is the first time we had Steve on the show. So go check out our summer school episode. But, you know, same, like he is an actor who has continued to work in the industry and some of his credits. We have the TV series. I don't know this show, but he was on a TV series called Riptide.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard of that either.
Like I said, summer school. This I thought was hilarious, specifically because of you.
Oh.
So he for a while, or I shouldn't say for, maybe for a while, he was on the TV show, another soap opera, The Young and the Restless. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was so funny is that he does play the same character the whole way through. He plays a character named Derek.
Okay.
But in his IMDb credits, they have Derek spelled three different ways. So they have Derek as D-E-R-E-C-K.
No.
D-E-R-E-K.
Yeah, that was good.
D-E-R-R-E-C-K.
Weird. No, not none of them with the I?
None of them with the I. I just thought it was so funny that they... And I've seen that from time to time. It's like the same character, but I guess on different episodes, they're credited with different spellings of the same name.
That's amazing.
Which is just wild to me that they don't keep that straight. But
he was in two episodes of Highway to Heaven as Deke. And I'm not convinced now that they just didn't misspell Derek.
He was in the film Leprechaun, which we'll be watching again shortly.
Oh, yeah. Those movies
St. Patrick's Day is coming up.
Those are like fantastically bad.
They're so fun.
Yeah. Starring Jennifer Aniston, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which she will never acknowledge.
She doesn't have to.
She doesn't like acknowledge.
I watch it anyway.
He was on the TV series Superforce, and then a couple more films. I think this is just kind of funny. Total Reality. Total Reality, man.
Just because a movie version of this show is coming out, I will mention that he was in one episode of The Fall Guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, although the movie looks nothing like the TV show. Probably for the best.
Okay. He was in a film called A Time to Revenge.
A Time to Revenge?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was fun. This one is hilarious. Marry Me or Die.
Is that the prequel to Time for Revenge?
Every person wants to be proposed to. Marry Me or Die.
Yeah. No, we just watched a lot of Love is Blind on Netflix. That could be a fucking theme of that show.
And then he's just done a lot of TV work as well. Okay, so moving on to Kit. Kit is his girlfriend in this movie. And it's kind of funny because I feel like they tried to incorporate a little bit more substance in the relationship, because when they're on the ferry, I think he says something like, you don't get it. Like, you go to a private school, I go to a public school.
Yeah, it'd never work.
And then that's like the most they talk about it. And it kind of just like goes away, I think. But
they talk a little bit about their respective futures before they go to make out in the super sexy, like, little dock house.
Yes, yes. That
I can only assume is god awful.
Oh, but, terrible.
But they do lay down a blanket.
They do.
That unlike blanket the was boards also filthy.
That don't, yeah, anyway, it's like the places people choose to have sex in these movies.
I definitely thought something was going to get her from like underneath the boards, because they make such a point of showing her hair kind of like slipping in between the boards.
Well, it's so dangerous. Like, they go into that little, like you said, like it's like a little house or something on the pier.
A boathouse, yeah.
And the boards are not, like, there are spaces between the boards, which it's like you can't even lay down. Like, you would feel your body falling through the spaces in the boards. And that's how she even sees Skip's body.
Floating by.
Floating, because you can literally see the water underneath you. It's so weird. But in any case, Amy Steele, and now for people who are fans of horror.
They know that name.
Very familiar name.
They know her.
Yep. Because she is the final girl in Friday the 13th Part 2, which a lot of people think is the strongest final girl of any of the final girls in that particular franchise.
Yeah, she dressed up like...
Yeah, she put on...
Like Mama Voorhees.
Yeah, she put on her disgusting sweater and...
That must have been
momentarily pretty, was able to convince Jason that she was mom.
It was close.
Listen to your mother, Jason. It was good. So she is in this as well. And that's probably the credit that she is most well known for. But some of her other work, she was on the TV show The Powers of Matthew Starr, another show called For Love and Honor. And then she did voice work as the same character in Jason Rising, a Friday the 13th fan film. And then just some TV work.
Interesting. Okay.
That's going to be a common refrain for pretty much everybody else. Like,
What would you say if I told you that she was in an episode of Family Ties?
Oh, I'd believe that. Sure.
Yeah. Everyone's been on Family Ties.
All these people are familiar to varying degrees.
Yeah.
Like, they all have done stuff. And probably, arguably, the very next person I'm talking about is the most famous of all of them, Tom Wilson, which possibly you don't know the name. Maybe you think it's the hockey player, the goon. But
no one's
in any case. He's always starting fights.
He is.
But Tom Wilson is Biff. Hello. Yep. From Back to the Future.
Yep.
So in this film, he plays Arch. Now, this film came out the year after Back to the Future, but I kind of get the sense it was maybe filmed before.
I do,
feels
too.
That way.
It does feel like that, yeah.
So, and of course, that actor was in the entire Back to the Future trilogy.
He looks a little younger in this.
He does.
So I think probably was,
And seeing him in this film, like, I think he's naturally like a big guy. He seems like a tall guy.
His name is Biff, I mean.
They had him put on some weight for Biff.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He seems...
He put on some more muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just seems like a bigger guy. So he is in the entirety of that trilogy as like different characters from Biff's family. The Tannen family, I think, is his last name.
Yes.
So he does Action Jackson.
It's a tough one to say.
It is.
It always is. Action Jackson. Oof,
well,
I made it.
You did well, yeah. I didn't realize that there was a Back to the Future TV show that he was in.
Was it animated?
Well, I do have like, he does do a ton of voice work. I didn't have it for that, but maybe it was. Maybe I missed that.
Because I do remember, like, an animated Back to the Future.
Then that must have been it, so.
I don't remember a live action one, though.
Okay, because that would be weird. He was in the film Camp Nowhere, And like I said, he's done a ton of voice work. He's done voice work for Wing Commander Academy, Gargoyles, Troll Hunters, Tales of Arcadia.
Oh, yeah. That was a good DreamWorks series.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The Patrick Star Show. So that's all voice work for him. He has a really great little role in the TV show that a lot of people lament didn't go on longer, Freaks and Geeks. He plays the gym teacher. He's great in that. He was in Larry the Cable Guy Health Inspector.
Interesting.
As well as the film The Heat with Sandra Bullock and McCarthy. Melissa McCarthy.
Very different from just Heat.
Correct.
Those movies could not be more different. I watched them both back to back thinking that I was like...
That article? The? Like,
yeah.
Having that article of the in this title, big...
One of the most important the's ever.
One of the most important articles ever. He was on the TV show Ghost Whisperer, as well as Zack Stone is gonna be famous. And then, I mean, he has a really extensive filmography, and has done just like a ton of TV work and other stuff. So, okay, our last credit.
Okay.
So we're at the end of our college students. I didn't bring up anybody who was like, there's like the ferry ship captain. I don't know what you call him.
I think that is their title. That is their title and rank is ferry ship captain
and the
operator
constable,
guy.
Which I was like, do people call individuals of the law constables?
They did in the '80s.
I know constable is like a British term, right?
We have to go find the magistrate.
Yeah, it's so I was like, what's this constable stuff? But in any case, okay. So moving on to the last of our college students, Nan. Played by Leah. You say her last name.
Leah Pinsent.
Thank you. Yeah.
No, it's... You look at it...
I was having
it,
some trouble with it.
You want to say the name and, you know...
It veers into something that is...
Leah Pinsent?
Unintentionally insulting.
Leah Pinsent. Look, my last name is mispronounced all the time. So, apologies, Leah.
You would think that mine wouldn't be so hard, but even just the other day, somebody said my last name wrong. Anyway... Hmm. This was her second acting credit. My goodness, use my words. So for all these people, like I said, especially like the actors, they're all super young. So for a lot of them, this is really early in their careers. It was driving me crazy throughout the entire film because I was like, I know her from somewhere. I looked at her filmography. Nothing came to mind as far as like why I would know her.
Uh-oh.
But it's going to drive me insane.
Okay. Well, it doesn't sound like there's a resolution for this.
I know you said that she does seem a lot like Helen Hunt, and you're right, but I don't think that's why I feel like she's familiar. But in any case, her filmography, there's a really interesting one at the end, but she was in the 1996 Virus, the film Walking the Dead, some TV work I have for her. She was in a show called The Industry, Regenesis.
Okay.
A film, this was just funny to me, a film called Wet Bum. So there you go.
All right.
And then this I thought was funny. So there's a TV show called Murdoch Mysteries. She has had three appearances from 2011 to 2024.
Okay.
A different person for each appearance.
Oh, I love it.
But I love that she has come back to the show over the course of over a decade.
Yeah.
As a different person.
That's amazing. I love it. I love the coming back to the same show as a different character.
I just think that's fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, film synopsis.
What do we got?
9 college students staying at a friend's remote island mansion begin to fall victim to an unseen murderer over the April Fool's Day weekend. Mm-hmm. But nothing is as it seems.
Not a goddamn thing.
No.
Nothing is as it seems.
A little bit of a wordy synopsis.
It is.
It kind of does the trick, I suppose. It's kind of weird because, like, they don't go there because it's April Fool's. They go there because they say it's their spring break.
Yeah.
Which is late for spring break, actually, in college. Very late. Like, you're getting out of college the next month. But I'm going to – so for anybody out there who's not familiar with the film, if you, like, want to watch the movie before you would listen to the rest of this – do so now.
it's already too late.
But here's the major spoiler. Okay, so all these kids come over to Muffy's house. They start getting killed. You start to see evidence of some of the kills that seems pretty convincing.
Oh, yeah.
Very convincing. Yeah. I mean, I'll give them that. The practical effects in this film are great.
They were, yeah.
Like Biff's head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all of them, from like the guy that's hit by the boat rotor.
Yep.
And gets part of his face like cut off.
Shoot off.
Yeah. From like falling into the well with like the floating like head, decapitated yep. heads. Like the practical effects were exactly what you would expect in this era for a slasher, for like a teen slasher kind of movie.
Yep.
That's like part of the, I don't want to say genius because that may be too strong of a word, but
sure.
that's part of what makes it so effective is that like up until the end, everything makes it feel like it's just like another like dumb slasher movie.
Mm-hmm. And actually, because I didn't know what was going to eventually be revealed, it was weird because I said to you, oh, the first half of this movie seems to be going by a lot quicker. However, the first half of the film, like nothing really happens in terms of like kills.
No.
Like, everything kind of happens in the second half of the film, but it also seems to be a little bit slower for some reason, oddly, for me, at least.
Yeah.
The only thing is that, like, you know something's up because Muffy/Buffy/Muffy, because it's really her all along,
yeah.
starts to act super weird.
She gets really fucking unhinged.
And, like, her attire changes, and, you know, it's, like, her trying to kind of, like, indicate that she's not the same person.
Yeah.
Even though it really is the same person. Yeah. I'll say to get back to this big reveal. So presumably everybody's died except for the couple, except yes. for Rob and Kit.
Yep.
So there's like, was it a storm that was keeping them there or something? Like, was there something else that was keeping them there? Or was it just that the phone died?
The phone died. The well was like the water went out.
That's oh, yeah. right. Yeah. That's right. Okay. So they finally do, though, get a hold of the constable and he tells them he's going to come out, but he doesn't show.
Yeah.
And so Kit and Rob, they come to realize what they think is the mass murder of their friends.
Mm-hmm.
So they run out to a boat. There's no key. So they have to go back into the house to get the key to the boat.
So they're trying to remember because at one point Muffy had actually said where the keys.
Yes.
Like, you know, tell where the spare key was for a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they run into the kitchen. Muffy finds Buffy. The person they think is Buffy.
Yeah.
Muffy's evil twin.
Uh-huh,
who's been in like an insane asylum or something for the last couple years.
Sure.
So she's coming after them. Rob gets like stuck in a closet or something.
Yeah.
And he's yelling to Kit like, run, I love you, run. So Kit literally has her back against the wall, so to speak. Buffy is approaching her with a knife.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Kit is begging her to not kill her.
Don't do that thing.
Don't do it. And then it's like sliding doors. It's like a partition.
Yeah.
So the partition opens, and then everybody that you think has been murdered is just quietly hanging out.
Having a drink.
Yeah, in like the like dining room or front room or whatever.
The parlor,
thank you. And Kit turns and sees them. They make no response to her. They don't even look at her.
Yeah.
They're literally all silent themselves, like reading or doing whatever. She looks back to who she thinks is Buffy. Buffy's just staring at her.
Uh-huh.
She just keeps looking. Kit just keeps looking back and forth. Then finally, Buffy shows her that it's a retractable knife.
She lifts the knife, tries to like stab her other hand with it,
yeah.
and you realize that it's just like a prop trick knife.
It's just a prop.
Yeah, where it just collapses.
And then everybody behind Kit starts laughing hysterically
and screaming, "April Fools!
April Fools!" And when that happened,
poor Rob is still
Rob is
stuck
in the closet,
yeah,
like
trapped
thinking,
in the fucking closet,
thinking that his girlfriend's getting murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't even know how Rob gets out, but he does. And very understandably, Kit is like, "That's not funny." But then she cut. Like, it is such a crazy ending because then the person who's been Muffy all along,
yeah.
gives this whole convoluted story about the fact that the only way her dad was going to let her inherit the house is if she was able to take care of all the expenses, which that actually was kind of an interesting thing to bring up. It's like,
yeah.
mansions are expensive to keep up.
Yeah, yeah. I get it. So, I don't get it because I don't have a mansion.
Yeah, but she says I didn't have any other way, which it's weird because it's like, it sounds like the money all came from her mom. It's like her mom didn't also have a trust for her. All she's getting is this like huge house. But in any case, she had to find a way to make money to take care of the house. And so her grand idea was to make it basically like you were saying earlier, like a murder mystery house.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no mystery really or murder. I get the proof of concept was to show that you could like get people into this environment and like the effects would be successful and you could kind of like manipulate people, but like no one's voluntarily gonna like put themselves
in. Yeah, and the thing is that it's like, are you then hiring the actors to play the people who were the college students? Because you can't just start killing you. There's no way. Like, she even was really chancing it to assume that all of her friends, who some of them she didn't know at all, would agree to go along with it after they were killed. Because that's also what made this whole ruse work.
Yeah.
Is that nobody knew that this was a joke until they were killed.
There are air quotes. Like, the twist happens and you're like, oh, what an interesting thing. And then you start thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like how it actually worked. And I'm like, wait a second.
Everybody would have to agree to it.
Yeah.
And keep themselves out of sight. And it was just too much. And this explanation went on for like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I was kind of like, really? That's what...
You know what, though? I appreciate the effort. I appreciate that it's like something that kind of stands out and is a little unique compared to all the other, like, quote-unquote traditional slashers from that time.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether or not it was successful or whether or not it starts falling completely apart if you think about it even a little, it was still, like, fun just for standing out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was really enjoying it, although I was kind of like, you know... I just assumed that it would wrap up with, like, maybe Kit and Rob getting off the island.
Nope.
I think that...
Then you thought there'd be credits after Muffy explains what happened? Nope.
Yeah, yeah, because it goes on, actually. I think, like, the thing for me is, like, that's not a funny joke. It's not a funny prank. It's not a funny April Fool's. To put someone in a position where they think their friends are getting... brutally murdered,
yeah,
and you yourself are about to die.
That's not funny.
Yeah.
This is like way more intense than even those like what are they, like blackout haunted house rooms where you get assigned something.
Because at least you know, even if you're terrified, that it's supposed to all be a joke and just performance.
Yeah,
but like when you don't know, that's not funny. And especially poor Rob thinking like, do you know how out of my mind I would be if I was, like, stuck in a closet and I thought that a murderer was chasing you around?
Look, the attorney in me says there may be some risk associated
with
this. There'd
be some consequences for it. Yeah. But in any case, to your point, the film doesn't end. They party. They party hard.
Yeah.
Because apparently she's proven her concept. And now she knows she can make this work. And apparently be able to pay for the house.
It's, yeah, you know, look, if you could make that happen, awesome. I think maybe you didn't have to prove it that way, but hey.
Then, so the movie's still not over. You would think it would maybe end on like a freeze frame of them partying, like shaking the champagne bottles. And
be
like
so
80s.
Yeah. Very 80s.
Does not end that way. Muffy goes up to her bedroom. She's totally drunk. She... closes the door, she sits on the end of the bed, and then Nan, who this is the other, I do want to bring this up at some point, but Nan surprises her by slitting her throat.
Yeah.
But ha ha.
It's a fake. It's another fake knife.
It's another fake knife.
With fake blood on it. Yeah.
Yeah, which it's like, Muffy responds in a way, though, where she thinks her throat has just been slit. It's like, wouldn't you know one way or the other if your throat had been slit?
Yes, you should. I suppose in the heat of the moment, you feel something slid across your neck, and then like wetness. You might think the worst.
Yeah,
but I don't know if this was as like overtly brought up in the movie. I mean, Nan is talking about like some like classic literature and stuff.
Yeah,
but apparently Muffy knew Nan from acting class.
Oh. Okay.
So,
Okay.
That kind of plays into, like, how she knew and how she picked people to show up.
Well, the thing I wanted to know about Nan is, you know, something, and this is one of the things that, like, they do throughout the film. Like, I was already talking about how, like, at one point they attempt to kind of go a little bit deeper with the relationship between Kit and Rob.
Yeah.
And then another point, so, like, Muffy is playing all these tricks on people before the murder start.
Yeah.
Like, collapsing chairs, whoopee cushions. Mm-hmm. We are exploding cigars, you know, so they're getting a taste of this before any of the, like, quote, murder stuff happens.
I know which prank you're going to bring up.
So Nan's in the shower.
Yep.
And she hears a baby crying.
Yeah.
And it's just a tape recording.
Yep.
But then somebody else alludes to the fact that Nan's really upset. And they're like, I don't know, something about an abortion.
That had to have been just, like, placed in there for part of this, like, that couldn't have actually really happened to Nan's character, right? Like, it had to be something that they just planted in there to make.
Otherwise,
that's really fucked up.
Yes, for that to be part of the joke, part of the, like,
if the prank is that you made everyone believe that she had this so that the baby recording would have been, like, part of this evil prank, okay.
But then that also means that Nan had to have known preceding her, quote, murder, that something was going on.
And the fact, like, that she knew her from an acting class means that could be possible. But she had some people that were in on it from the beginning and most everyone not as much.
It just was so, and I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I don't think it's a film I'm going to watch again.
No.
You say that with a question mark or a definitive no?
Yeah, no, there's a question mark.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I will because it's like, I mean, I doubt that the film was so sophisticated that it's like, you know, The Sixth Sense, where, like, if you watch it again, you're, like, picking up clues.
No, if that's a good point. If you watch it again, maybe if I watch it again, I'm going to find all these little pieces that show how well and, like, tightly put together this whole story, convoluted story was.
Sure.
But I also think it's more likely that I'm going to watch it again and find out all the ways in which it does not fucking make any sense.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, like, response, you know, I did read that people were torn on, like, some people thought, okay, get it, April Fool. Like, the film encapsulates what that holiday is.
Yeah.
So some people loved it for that. But then other people did think that it was, like, a cop-out.
I wonder, like, did people know going into it that it was all, like, did people know about the twist?
And, I don't know.
Like, I feel like now everyone would probably know because the internet, but
The Sixth Sense was probably the last time that, like, things could really be hush-hush.
I feel like there's a chance you could have gone into the theater to see this when it first came out, expecting something and getting something totally different. And that would have been actually pretty cool.
Yeah. I did not know the ending to The Others. I was surprised. I found out, like, literally.
Oh, The Others.
Three seconds. I put it together way too late. But I was like, as they were, like, saying what was happening.
It's so hard with that now because, like, people, like, share the stuff on social media. Yeah, and
it's
find
just
out.
Too easy to get spoiled.
But then sometimes, like, the way that it's marketed.
Yeah.
It's marketed in a way to where you know there's going to be some kind of crazy twist.
Is there anything that's come out in the last 10 years where there was some kind of, like, twist and they were telling people, don't, like, please don't share the twist? I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I can't either.
Yeah. I feel like those days are kind of long gone, unfortunately. I don't know what people knew or didn't know coming into the film when it first released. But, I mean, I give it credit for doing something different.
Yeah, it does.
You do, for the most part, get a horror film until you realize that it's not.
It's one of, like, when we think about some of these movies and how, like, problematic or how, like, inappropriate some of the stuff can get, this one's relatively tame.
It is.
Compared to, so, I mean, look, I'm saying that Even given that we started the podcast off with Nikki talking about all that stuff. So
I don't think there's any nudity.
No, they get close.
They get close.
They get real damn close. Like, there's a magic shirt that
Oh, sure. She's when like, she's looking out the window. Yeah, it just covers the right bits.
Like, what the? They must have taped it up. Like, that was.
Oh, for sure they did. Yeah, for sure they did. And I mean, I'm sorry, but one of the more hilarious, I'm ad nauseum using air quotes when I say like kill or murder because nobody dies. Mm-hmm. But when Chaz supposedly dies, he dies from getting his penis cut off. Like, yeah. He's, like, covering himself, and she thinks that he's,
not
like...
Not much blood afterwards.
No, and like I said, like, maybe you would eventually bleed out if you got literally no medical care, but you would not already be dead.
The weird part about that was he put on, like, this mask.
That's what we thought was going to happen.
Yeah, he put this mask on that would basically have been from, like, the Gimp in Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
And he kind of talks about how he can't breathe, and he's kind of struggling to get it off.
They all signs pointed towards him suffocating.
Yeah, so I was just very confused because then he's just like laying there covering his junk with the mask on. Did he suffocate? Did he die from not much, like a shot glass worth of blood maybe soaked into his... It was all very confusing.
And it would just like, you know, in that moment then when Nikki realizes that he's quote dead.
Yeah, it was all hilarious but confusing.
And then they do a real quick cutaway to a killer POV shot.
Yeah.
Which that was used really sporadically. Like, I guess you can argue that that also was used when Arch was in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess then the snake was completely accidental that there was a snake there also.
They used so much foreshadowing with that snake. It's like, we get it.
Yeah, the snake is going to bite him after him.
So Arch, a.k.a. Biff, is walking through the woods trying to find... who was he trying to find?
Nan, I think?
Possibly.
Or no, Skip.
That's right. He was looking for Skip. And as he's walking around, he gets his foot caught in a trap, like a trap that lifts him up in the air.
Yeah.
And has these like suspended over the snake, just constantly like
snapping at him. Yeah. Which it did look like a real snake. I don't know. I didn't look closely enough to see if it was like maybe a stunt person in the net and not actually the actor. But it looked like a real snake snapping at whatever was in that net.
Yeah, they didn't have VFX, CGI snakes.
They did not rotoscope.
No.
Yeah, so that looked pretty legit, which I hope that snake was treated well.
I thought...
on set.
I thought he got bit a couple times.
I thought he did too, but they didn't talk about it once the reveal happened that he actually got hurt.
That's why I thought that it was all real, because I'm like, wow, that is a crazy way to trap and kill someone in one of these movies.
I felt like overall the kills were not super inventive. My favorite scene, though, is the well scene.
Oh, yeah.
When Nikki goes down into the well, was she retrieving a flashlight or something?
I think so. Yeah, dropped the flashlight.
Yeah, I'm like, the flashlight's done. Don't bother with the flashlight. But she goes down, and then you see the head of, do you see Biff first? I don't know who you see first, but you see Biff's head, which was incredibly well done.
Yeah.
And then you see Skip's head, which actually was so smart because presumably Skip did die first.
Mm-hmm.
And so his head looks more like decomposed.
Yeah.
So they did a great... So there's two severed heads.
Whoever worked on those effects.
Yeah, like they actually put thought into like, okay, well, at the time that she found these heads and the rate of decomposition, they would look different. So they did do that. So that was actually really impressive that the two heads looked different. And then you also saw Nan's body. And actually what's interesting about that is that Nan... Like, I don't think they ever talk about how she, quote, died, but it appeared to be, like, she had her throat slit.
Yes.
So that was by far the most impressive scene in the entire film.
So shout out to Real Effects and Martin Becker.
Okay. Thank you for highlighting that. Yeah.
Becker, Jim Gill, Betty Kaufman, Christopher Swift, and Barbara Ann Bach all worked on the special effects.
Really good job. The practical effects were awesome. And I just still, I don't know. I mean, like, are you going to watch this movie again? Was it fun for you? What did you think of it?
I'd watch it again. If we were just like reeling together a bunch. And part of it, like the kills weren't as graphic or as over the top. And that was intentional. It was meant to be like kind of not a palate cleanser, but just like a notch down or two from like the really crazy at that time graphic killings in like the Friday the 13th movies.
Okay.
So there was like a reason for how they like portrayed all of that in this compared to some of the other slasher movies we've seen.
And I mean, something to keep in mind is that they probably felt compelled to shake things up, so to speak, because like, yes, it's 1986. We're barely halfway through the decade. However, at that point in time in horror, we are well into like late stage slasher films.
Yeah. There are so many. So this one did something a little bit different.
Yeah. Like, if you do even like a real quick Google search of all the slasher films that came out in the 80s, at this point there are hundreds. If I mean, could
yeah,
because
they were like so cheap to make.
Yep.
You could get talent that, you know, was just trying to look to get their foot in the door to make a big break. The practical effects worked more than good enough in most cases, because you wanted to look over the top. You didn't want it to look like so real that you're like, what, you know. So they're just, there are so many of them. I wonder if they're more expensive now. Sorry. I wonder if they're more expensive now because of like the shift from practical effects.
I mean, I love practical effects. I know that for actor safety or for like scale, like depending on what it is that they are trying to do, sometimes, you know, having access to CGI is a godsend.
Yeah.
Pending the story you're trying to tell. But like, really, nothing beats practical. Even practical that's like not that great is just so much more fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like, I do some film reviews for Wicked Horror. And, you know, the films that I am reviewing tend to be extremely low budget. But one thing that I always respect, I more often than not watch movies where the filmmakers, like, the story may not be great, the acting may not be great, but they really love their practical effects and trying to do really fun kills. And I always respect the hell out of those filmmakers because they, like, kind of, so to speak, know what the audience wants.
Yeah.
And, and again, it's just so much more enjoyable to me to watch even a bad practical versus, you know, any kind of CGI almost. So
bad practical
in the genre of horror.
Yeah. Bad practical and horror, you just kind of like laugh at it. It looks just kind of crazy, but bad CGI just takes you out of it entirely.
Yeah. So it's, and they did do a really good job. I mean, I'm not mad at this movie.
You seem
like
a little upset with this movie.
No, I'm not. I didn't feel like betrayed. I was just like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the only thing that I don't know what they do differently, but like, if she didn't have to give such a long-winded speech about why she did what she did, I think I would appreciate it more. But it seemed like they were like, here's where we explain to the audience what just happened.
Again, consider the audience.
Sure.
Consider the group of kids who basically went to the movie theater in the 80s to watch what they thought was
good. I wonder what like a teenager must have felt. I bet they would be pissed. They might be like, I wanted a slasher.
They might have been. So maybe that like factored into like, okay, we're going to have to explain this.
And they got no TNA. So it's like,
no.
They got no kills. Nope. They got no nudity.
They got close to both.
They got close to both. So on that note, call to action. I mean, man, I would love to hear from people who had seen this movie blind, like had no idea, or if they did know the twist and if that in any way affected like them enjoying the film.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
Sure.
My call to action will be, what was your best and worst April Fool's Day experience?
I don't know if I can recollect. Can you recollect specific circumstances?
No. I can't, but maybe someone's out there who can.
Sometimes they do a really good job online. Like, I feel like you have to get so sophisticated now with the way that you do pranks.
I just avoid the internet on April 1st now because there will be like fake trailers for movies that aren't actually being made for video. Like
that,
like,
stuff's fun though.
There's like a fan favorite video game franchise and there's like a story about it getting like ported over to a new console or something. Like, I just know all this stuff is fake now. I'd seen like fake announcements for a Legend of Zelda movie, I'm pretty sure, but now they're actually gonna do it, so who knows what to believe.
I just love when people still have kind of that sense of like fun.
Yeah, I think it should be
want to do something as long as it doesn't hurt anybody or scare anybody or make people think they're about to die.
If it ends with someone saying, it's just a prank, bro, then that prank sucked. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Don't take it so personal.
It's just a prank, bro.
It's just a prank, bro. Okay. So if you want to get in touch with us, we would love to hear from you. You can reach out through Facebook, Instagram,
Twitter X.
Twitter X! It's the same handle for all three. It is at 80s Montage Pod, and 80s is 80s. Sneak peek.
Mm. What do we got? I literally do not
know. I
know
you don't know.
Yeah, okay.
What can I even... I did not think of a clue for you.
Uh-oh. Who's in it?
Well, that might kind of give it away.
Interesting.
Welding?
Flashdance.
Oh my god! Good job! Yeah! Derek, I'm so impressed. That was really
good. I know what it's about. I know how it starts.
Have you seen it?
No, I don't. I've seen, like, parts of it, but...
Okay. Yeah, I'm super excited to cover this one. This is... I don't know if I'd say it's, like, a favorite, per se, but I just love this movie. I think it's really good. Obviously, amazing soundtrack.
I mean, we've covered a movie that was kind of like the Flashdance of its Footloose.
Sure.
Footloose being compared to Flashdance. So now we're just going to watch the actual Flashdance.
I mean, it's another film that has a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
And great dance moves.
Great welding.
Great in Footloose.
Either one.
I don't know. Do they don't do welding in Footloose. They do, like, hay baling.
Tractor racing.
Tractor racing.
Yeah.
Great song plays during that scene.
Yeah.
But in any case, Flashdance coming up in 2 weeks' time. And in the meantime, just thank you to everybody out there for hanging with us with all of your different podcast choices.
It's too many.
There's so many.
Too many. How'd you find us?
We really appreciate you listening to us, and we will talk to you again in 2 weeks' time.